the dimension of stillness beyond thinking, out of which all thinking arises. Now, when you leave here, many of you, if not most of you, are going back into more doing again. So your challenge will be not to lose the rootedness in that deeper dimension while you are engaged in whatever you do. And the world will do all it can to challenge you, to pull you out of that rootedness. And it will tell you, not in so many words, but it will, in the form of events and people and happenings and things not working, and so will tell you, this is all important. Give me your fullest attention. This really matters. It may matter, but as I put it, all those things matter relatively. They may be relatively important, whether or not you miss your plane, whether or not you find that great job or you lose that great job, or whatever happens, it's all relatively important. But only one thing is of absolute importance, and that is your connectedness with being, so that that dimension is with you as you in your daily life. That's the challenge. A few things will be helpful in this. One is letting go of the unconscious assumption that there should be no problems and difficulties, and if they are, that they are undesirable obstacles that really shouldn't be there in the form of events or people or situations. But if you look back on your life, and I look back on my life, it's always been challenging. There are brief moments when it's not challenging, and that's great. But you know very well that life won't leave you alone. It'll challenge you one way or another. If you look at the world situation, it's the same. There's all kinds of challenges in the news. First there were the communists, there was a Cold War, and then there are suddenly other huge challenges arising. And there's, it goes on and on. So in the words of the first sentence in the book called The Road Less Traveled, which I never read because the first few sentences were so good I didn't need to read the rest of it. And the first sentence is, now this might go against certain New Age beliefs, and it might at first sound negative, because the first sentence is, life is difficult. That doesn't sound very inspiring. And then the next sentence, although I don't remember it literally, says, and if you know that, if you're completely okay with the fact that life is difficult, then it's no longer difficult. So that's all I read. Because that says it all already. How does that work? How is life, when you know that life is difficult, it's no longer difficult? You try to work that out. Well, here's the explanation. It's really only difficult if you think that it shouldn't be difficult. Because then you're in continuous resistance to things and people and events. But once you accept it's an essential part of life, of being difficult, then whenever the next difficulty arises, you say, oh, there's life again, being difficult. In other words, what does that do? It creates an acceptance of what is. If you carry around the assumption in your head, it shouldn't be difficult, there should be no difficult people and obstacles and problems, and things should not get cancelled, and plans should not be interrupted, and nobody should fall ill, and then people shouldn't die, certainly. That's a travesty. These things should not, they're all dreadful. There's an underlying assumption, things should go smoothly. And so, of course, sometimes they do go smoothly. But the irony or the paradox is that once you recognize the fact that life is difficult, that life is not meant to make you happy, it's not meant to make you unhappy, but it makes you unhappy if you have a wrong attitude towards life. Happiness comes with accepting the fact that challenges are an essential part of the evolutionary process for all life forms. So, challenges for you, even if you don't call them challenges, challenge is a nice term because something positive is already implied within it. If you call it problems or bad stuff happening, then it doesn't sound so good. Challenges are here to awaken you. And even if you're awakening, life continues to give you challenges, and then the awakening accelerates and deepens. And at whatever state you're at, you won't be free as long as you're here of challenges. So if you recognize that, you no longer need to be in a hostile, confrontational relationship with life, you're not pissed off all the time with another thing happening, I'm so pissed off with life. Cascade on. And people just can't take anymore, just... And there's a kind of accepting, not necessarily welcoming, but sometimes welcoming, every situation that arises. That is, so if you welcome it, there's a book by Byron Katie called Loving What Is. That means you are in an accepting relationship with whatever arises. Of course, it all arises in the present moment. Anything else that arises is in your mind. So you need to differentiate between challenges, problems, difficulties that are actual in the form of people, events, or situations, and challenges, problems, and difficulties that are fictitious, that are purely created by your mind, creating pseudo-problems. For example, when you worry in the middle of the night, huge problems. Are those the real challenges of life? No, these are fictitious problems created in your mind, dwelling on things that happened but should not have happened. Those are not the real challenges of life. Those are the challenges of your mind, the mind-created problems. So you need to very clearly differentiate in your life between actual difficulties, challenges, or problems. There is a person who is shouting at you, that's an actual. Or there is the thing, you just missed your flight and you can't get on the next one or the next one. Or financial challenges, relationship challenges, family situations, work situations, actual things that happen that need to deal with, or But then there's a huge amount of suffering that is generated not by the actual challenges of life, but by the fictitious problems that the mind creates, sometimes around the actual challenges of life, and sometimes out of thin air, things that could go wrong. So, on the one hand, you have your mind creating a lot of useless suffering through unconscious thinking, and then you have the actual situations in your life. So, you don't have to endure your mind. When it says life is difficult, that shouldn't really include your mind, because that's something you can do something about immediately. You don't have to live with a dysfunctional mind. Millions still do. That is something that can be transcended, and this is, of course, what we are doing here, what you are doing as part of the awakening, is a huge amount of the life is difficult. A huge percentage of that difficulty is created by the mind. That we can deal with, that can change, that does not have to be. Once, when you do that, then the next part is actual situations will still occur. Once you know that, then you can come to a more surrendered approach to life and actually almost or actually welcome the difficult people in your life, the difficult situations in your life, loss and so on, without demanding unconsciously, not in so many words perhaps, that demanding this should not be happening and there's something dreadfully wrong when things go wrong in your life. And that makes life really difficult. This is what the man means by, at the beginning of the book, the author, when he says, life is difficult, but when you know that life is difficult and you fully come to terms with the fact that life is difficult, it's not difficult anymore, because the greatest difficulty is the mental resistance to things that arise and the underlying assumption that they should not. So once you end, you have then a surrendered relationship with the present moment, because everything arises in the present moment, then it's not really that difficult anymore. And you can, even in the midst of turmoil, still be connected with the realm of being within yourself. So there's always a core of stillness, if only in the background. And no matter what happens, that core of stillness is there, if we want to call it stillness. It's also, as we saw, and as you know, it's also the source of satisfaction, where true satisfaction or a true sense of well-being that goes beyond physical well-being, a true sense of well-being comes from. It's the transcendent dimension. So life will challenge you with its difficulties, small and big. Small happen probably every day in some form. So you don't get upset anymore when things don't go according to plan. You don't get upset and complain or irritated or angry when people don't behave the way they should behave. And that makes it so much easier when you no longer demand that these things should not be the way they are. Nobody should, they shouldn't cancel flights. Weather shouldn't be in such a way that they can't fly anymore. The body shouldn't get old. Nobody should have catch an illness. Now, a lot of illnesses are produced, or you're much more prone to have an illness if your mind is very dysfunctional, because that lowers the physical resistance. It affects the body. What the mind does obviously affects the body. Even mainstream medicine is beginning to recognize your mental emotional state affects your physical state. So if your mental emotional state is very dysfunctional, your body's resistance to illness decreases, the likelihood increases that you catch something. There are other causes of illness, so nobody can be totally free and say, I'm never going to be ill. The body is a physical vehicle with a certain lifespan, and as it approaches the later stages of its lifespan, it's just like an old car. Things start to go wrong with it. It's another form. And the older your car gets, the more things need to be replaced. And the time comes when it's just not working anymore. So it will be easier for you to deal with the challenges of life if you actually realize that the challenges are good. They force you to awaken. And that's what's happening here. For a long time, challenges, the only thing that challenges do is they make people suffer. And that can go on for a long, long time. I sometimes say everybody has a spiritual teacher, everybody on the planet. For most people, their spiritual teacher is their suffering. Because eventually the suffering brings about an awakening. And then there are a few who are advanced enough, who already have gone through their suffering, and then they come into contact with an actual spiritual teaching in the form of wisdom tradition or an actual spiritual teacher or even in the form of a book. And they suddenly say, oh, wow, yes. And then evolution accelerates. So for you, there's already this acceleration, because otherwise the evolution of consciousness is very slow. Evolution works very slowly. And for many humans, it's still the case. Well, that's why we repeat the same mistakes, politicians and so on. Haven't they read any history books? Just go back 50 years and then you make the same mistake again. Go back 40 years. So, condemned to repeat the past, this is part of karma, and then you reach that stage where an acceleration begins and you're all at that stage, which is wonderful. So whenever confronted with a challenge in whatever form, look at it, be careful that your mind does not weave a whole huge web of useless thinking around it, then it gets really difficult. And realize most challenges are actually fairly simple. Here's the situation or the person. I can either do something about it, what action is possible now, and with that comes that clear looking. What action is needed now? There's that presence flows, and presence can become, there can be a presence-inspired doing. Before there is a presence-inspired doing, you need to look at the situation. And when you look not necessarily just visually, but put your awareness on the situation, and there is a time span where you are in order to access primordial intelligence, which is in the stillness. Whenever a situation arises, you look at the situation, and in the looking, which means giving it attention, there is no thinking. There's just an alert looking, facing it. And then, how long that is varies. It could be a few seconds. It could be a minute. It could be 2 minutes, but often a few seconds of giving it alert attention is enough. Then whatever it is needed will come to you, possible causes of action, and then one That's a responding to a situation. Or you look and you realize nothing can be done right now, and that's perfectly fine. And while nothing can be done, you accept what is and are still connected, and sometimes more deeply connected, in the face of even sometimes unpleasant circumstances, more deeply connected with the true source of satisfaction, which you can quickly access if you become friendly with what is. Just becoming friendly with what is, and immediately it's easier to access the source of satisfaction, and that which transcends the ego. The ego is sustained by continuous resistance, denial. No, it's against it. Whatever it is, I'm against it, and it's usually the present moment, with brief exceptions. So, coming to accept the isness of people and situations, and realizing this situation cannot be otherwise from the way it is. Why not? It should be. No, it can't be, because it already is. The entire universe, the entire history of the universe has brought about, because since everything is connected to everything else, anything that happens is connected to the totality. So the totality of the universe, since the Big Bang, has brought about this event. So that's what is. There's nothing you can do. Then you can do something and take action, yes. But prior to taking action, there's an acceptance of the isness. Then there is an insight into what is possible. And then action, if it is possible, happens. Or there is a realization that nothing is possible, then surrender happens. And in that surrender, you are internally free of the situation. So in that surrender or acceptance, you can sense the satisfaction arising not because something is going well, because it may not be right now, but because you are connected with the source of all satisfaction, all life, and it feels it's fine. You may be trapped somewhere, and it's fine. So, people, every human acts, speaks in the way that corresponds to their state of consciousness at that moment. Sometimes you encounter humans, it's very common for humans to fluctuate between being relatively more conscious and quite unconscious. So you might meet the same person that you know well, or family member, in two or three or more different modalities of consciousness, as you might know. And when you're having breakfast in the morning, and the family member or your roommate is coming down the stairs, you never know who is coming down the stairs that morning. It could be a very cheerful and lovely person. Isn't it great to be alive? And the next morning, there comes a completely different entity down the stairs and starts complaining, and why didn't you do this? You should have told me long ago. I've been thinking about that all night. It's just awful. You always do that, don't you? Who is that? Well, that was the person that was light and cheerful yesterday morning. And who knows who's coming down the next day. So with people who are fairly unconscious, they are subject to enormous fluctuations, and you also, to the extent that you could call them virtually certain different personalities emerging at different times. So you're not dealing with one human being. People, then I'm talking about people who have not yet enough presence to bring about a more continuous state of identity. So you have all these people, and then you might talk to one person, and he says, okay, I'm now very clear in my mind what I want, and I promise you those things that I did yesterday, 2 days ago, this will never happen again. I'm really become very clear now. It's all sorted out in my mind. And this person is genuinely believing that he's at a relatively slightly higher state of consciousness. And a few days or weeks pass, and then he or she does exactly the same thing as before, or worse. And then you say, he's dishonest. He lied to me. He said he wouldn't do that again. He betrayed my trust. I trusted him. We had a long talk. I started to trust him again. And then what did he do? He turned around and did the same thing, went worse. Not realizing these are, because the person is relatively unconscious, different sub-personality take that person over, which are just mental patterns, mental-emotional patterns that could be called sub-personalities. They take over that person, and then there's somebody else there virtually. And so it's not, if you draw certain conclusions that this person now can never be trusted again, no, that wasn't the same person. It's several different people there. If you draw some conclusion and even draw some universal conclusion, then you yourself become deluded. If you say, you see, now I know people can't be trusted. They do lie all the time, don't they? So suddenly the one sub-personality becomes everybody. And well, it does apply to the majority of people still. You need to remember the majority of people are often completely possessed by mental, emotional forms of conditioning. And sometimes certain forms of conditioning arise very strongly and take over that person. And then that subsides. There's a little bit of, so perhaps occasionally a little bit of awareness there before the next wave of conditioning comes and takes that person over. Once you see that, it's easier also to be with people because whatever behavior a person manifests towards you is the same as whatever the present moment presents. It cannot be otherwise. At this present moment, nobody can act beyond their state of consciousness at this moment. But you should be more conscious. More conscious? What are you talking about? You talk about consciousness. Let me tell you what you did. Start arguing with an ego, you can never win. So, dealing with your mind, life is difficult, yes. People are difficult, yes. Situations are often difficult, yes. But they are much less difficult if your mind does not amplify the problems that you encounter and the people that you encounter in your life. That already takes away a huge burden, so that your mind no longer complains and has those patterns that deny what is, and that's weaves huge stories around people and events and about the past and about the future, the worry, the regret, the anxiety. These are all mental events that do not have to be part of the difficulty of life. These can be transcended here and now. What then remains is the actual, and once you have tackled the problem-making dysfunction of your mind, and this is, of course, what we are all here, one of the reasons why we are here, and that is part of the spiritual awakening. Once you go beyond the problem-making dysfunction of the mind, it becomes so much easier to deal with the difficult things in life. they are far less complex than the mind made them out to be. And there's always just looking, giving attention, then you become intelligent. You only become really intelligent when you can suspend for a moment the thinking function. So you rise above thought, and then you become alert, and then you look. Okay. And then you'll know what to do. And if the doing succeeds, it's fine. If it doesn't, you look again. It's the art of living. So without the dysfunctional mind, things get easier. The dysfunctional mind isn't there anymore when you accept the isness of the present moment. So the challenges come, they are external and internal. Your own mind is a big challenge, but that is, you're already in the process of transcending that. The other challenges remain, and that is good. Do not wait, however, for difficult situations to push you into presence. It's good if that happens, but choose presence even when you're not being challenged, because that is vital. Otherwise life will, the universal intelligence that underlies all phenomena, will see that, oh, this guy needs more problems, because otherwise he goes to sleep all the time. Let's give him a few more. All life sees, oh, whenever you're waiting, you become present. When you're in nature, you're present. You invite presence into your life. In the middle of the night, when worry starts, you suddenly realize this is not only futile, it's also destructive, and you surrender that kind of thinking and put your attention on your breathing instead or into your body. Those are things you voluntarily invite presence into your life. And then presence power, so to speak, presence power grows in you. Then as when a bigger situation happens, there's so much more presence to deal with it. I've spent years of my life just dwelling in presence. You don't have to do that. I mean, you can be active at the same time. There were years of my life with very little doing. And I was just sometimes spending hours on my bicycle or walking in a park, just being. And sometimes I had this strange feeling that there's a reason why I have to do that. It's not doing it, just call it. So it's like going very deep in order to go out and make a difference in this world. I had to go very deep within first, very deep, and then the going out became possible. How much difference you make in this world is always relative to how deep you go within yourself, how much presence you access within yourself, how connected you are with the essence of who you are, the essence of life. That determines how much difference you really make in this life. And so you're all going to make and are already making an enormous difference, and the universe loves consciousness. The universe is consciousness, and consciousness wants to emerge more fully on this planet and on many other planets, I'm sure, because that is what underlies the evolution of the whole universe. So by having the awakening of consciousness and the your presence practice as your main life goal, no matter what you do on the surface of your life, your job, your relationships, your main goal is in your relationships, in your work situation, in your home situation, your main goal is being present wherever you are and whatever you do. Then your life becomes empowered and you will do a lot of good without necessarily feeling that I am doing it. It flows through you. And those of you who are still looking for something to do, think, what am, the question often people ask me, what am I meant to do? Where am I meant to be? Who am I meant to be with? And of course the first answer is the foundation for it all, to find out where you are meant to be, what you are meant to do, who you are meant to be with. The first answer is you're meant to be here, you're meant to be doing what you're doing right now, and you're meant to be with whoever you are with right now at this moment. That's foundation. I'm not talking about for the rest of your life, but right now. So you come to a full acceptance of whatever is in the present moment. Now, most people who are trying to figure out what they're supposed to do in their lives, they don't give their fullest attention and they're not fully aligned with the present moment, where they are, who they are with. They are rejecting it in some way. And that obstructs the power and obstructs the arising of presence. So you become accepting and comfortable with where you are right now. So you're meant to be here right now. That's why I'm meant to be here. So that can become a foundation for realizing what you should do once you accept the isness of present moment. What the doing then arises out of that state of alignment with life, with this alignment with the present moment. Then you might get insights into what it is you want to do, or rather what the universe or the one consciousness wants to use you for. So you no longer look at what do I want from life, but what does life want from me? How can I be of service to the one consciousness, you could say. And if then it begins to flow through you, and it could be, it might start flowing through you in exactly the same doing that you've already been doing, but now you're doing it fully presently. Let's say you're an aspiring actress, but in the meantime you're working at a fast food restaurant. So can you be fully accepting of where you are right now without losing your goal, but giving your fullest loving attention to whatever you're doing right now, even if it seems repetitive? You give it your loving attention. And it is often the case when you are completely aligned and completely accept what is, things begin to change. When you are in non-acceptance internally, you're stuck. Can also happen that once you accept the present moment completely, you realize, I cannot be here any longer, and you just walk out. That can happen too. But it would not be a confrontational thing. It's a very peaceful realization what it is that you need to do. So honor whatever it is you're doing at this moment. I sometimes admire in some restaurants, you have waiters or waitresses who are wonderfully present. They give, it doesn't necessarily mean the most expensive restaurant. In fact, in the most expensive, often they're just snobbish and they don't. But in some, even in simple restaurants, some are just, they, when they put a glass down, they're present. It's done with care and attention. And when they ask what you want, they're present. It's so it, anywhere you can practice presence and you can affect people, no matter where you are, because you will come into contact with some people. Its presence is contagious, as Tammy just told us, in a good way. Presence is contagious. Whoever you come into contact with will be affected by your presence. And then you will attract, almost miraculously, the right people or the right situations into your life that then will bring about a change. So by being present, you are connected to the totality and you attract people and situations into your life that are helpful. And then once you realize, oh, this is what I want to do, the doing, the insight comes. Or it could be just a continuation of what you're doing already, but now you're doing it in an empowered way. Might be totally different too. Once you realize and you take more action, empowered by presence, then you find many helpful factors suddenly appearing. The moment you're aligned with the arising consciousness and your main goal is presence, sustaining presence no matter where you are and what you're doing, then your actions become empowered by that one consciousness. New ideas come, events, helpful things happen. It does not mean that obstacles do not happen. In fact, obstacles often do happen, but an obstacle, and this is vital, and you need to be very alert within yourself, when an obstacle arises in the form of something not working out, in the form of a person who wants to block you, sabotage you, whatever it is, an obstacle or difficult bureaucrats or government departments who don't want you to do whatever you want, many forms of obstacles, and an obstacle arises and you become negative and angry, irritated, upset. That means you've lost the power, you've lost presence, it's no longer flowing through you. The ego has come in. So how you deal with obstacles in your course, chosen course of action, determines whether there's a continuing power flowing through you or whether the ego has taken its place. So an obstacle is never fought against. You either walk around it, so to speak, or you transform it by bringing a positive energy to it. So you don't make people who seem to be blocking you into enemies. So you transform the seeming obstacle. Often it can be transformed into actually a helpful presence, because your state of consciousness determines the further development of that situation. The situation arises. What happens after the situation has arisen is determined by the state of consciousness in which you receive or respond to that situation. So a difficult person, if you react egoically against a difficult person, then that person will become even more difficult. And in the process, your consciousness goes down. You become, and you may well end up at the same level of consciousness as that difficult person. That happens by the moment you both shout at each other. And this has happened to spiritual people. They lost it. It's okay. You have to lose it, and then you regain it, and then you lose it again, and then you regain it. So if you find yourself in a shouting argument with somebody, obviously you lost it. And if you beat yourself up for being in a shouting argument with somebody, you lost it again. And then you say, okay, I lost it again. Am I going to beat myself up again for losing it the second time when I beat myself up? No. So you become accepting also of your own shortcomings and start again. But it's so vital, any situation that comes, your attitude, your consciousness towards the situation determines how it develops further. Whether it's a human being or a more complex situation at work or relation in relationship. So there's an active part in you that determines what happens. In that sense, we could say that the universe, reality so-called, tends to reflect back to you your state of consciousness. And some people create enormous drama out of very little, a tiny little thing, and their reaction, the egoic reaction, is so huge that the tiny little thing gets blown up out of all proportion, and then they even convince others that this is a huge drama. One of my shortcomings is that I cannot respond to all the mail I get or read all the manuscripts and books people send. And I would need a staff of several full-time people just to respond to letters. And if they're responding to letters, they would get more letters back and it would proliferate. I read some and it's wonderful to read. Often it's a beautiful message, what we've been helped. Some people, however, their ego may be quite strong. They expect an answer. They don't realize how many people write in. I had this when my Power of Now was published, somebody said to me, you should send it to a famous person and that famous person could write an endorsement and then the book will reach many more people. So I sent it to Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer and never heard from them. And I thought, okay, well, they may not have read it or they read it and didn't like it. I didn't fully realize, I didn't have great expectations, didn't realize they can't read, but they get hundreds of books every month. How can they read my book? I didn't know that, but I didn't have an ego reaction about it. Later, Deepak Chopra, of course, did read the Power Now and wrote a lovely endorsement when I didn't need it anymore. But there are some people who got so angry with me because I didn't respond to their letters that it became gigantic drama. There was letters coming one after another. How dare you ignore me? It's a gigantic drama. I became the worst person on the planet to them. So, and this is just a little example of the same relatively insignificant thing can proliferate and grow into some huge tumor in consciousness. So you're actually, the development of your life and what situations you encounter is related to your state of consciousness. And as your state of consciousness changes, the way in which you experience the world, in other words, people, events, situations, changes. It doesn't mean it won't be challenging anymore, but the challenges will be of a different kind, and dealing with them will become so much easier. And occasionally when a big one comes, that means you're meant to go even deeper into presence. It all works beautifully once you see. Because many people, they look at the surface of life and it looks like it's all random events happening and it's all totally chaotic and meaningless and I don't understand any of it. There is an intelligence behind it. But when you only look at the surface of surface reality, you don't necessarily see it. You have a very limited view. So it's up to you to be aligned with that real intelligence that's behind the entire world, that creates form and lives in and through form, and yet also exists in a timeless, formless dimension that we cannot possibly conceive of. As you know, the universal belief, even now still held by mainstream science, is that the universe is a random, accidental event. That is still the main belief of mainstream science. All life is accidental. There's no intelligence behind it. And you are an accident, somehow happened. And the greatest mystery of the universe is not the atomic realm or the galaxies. The greatest mystery of the universe science has hardly approached and doesn't know anything about. The greatest mystery of the universe is the fact that the universe is conscious. And what consciousness is, science doesn't know, and some scientists even deny that there is such a thing as consciousness. What do they say about that? Must be the chemical soup in the brain is having a kind of illusion. But the only thing that you cannot doubt is that you are conscious, even if everything else is a dream, which it could be, and in a way it is. But the fact is, the dream is appearing in the light of consciousness, without which there would be no dream. So I am conscious, and of course science tells you that consciousness is an epiphenomenon, another word for it would be byproduct, of the brain, of the material brain. So that consciousness, if they even use the word, is produced by something that happens in the material brain, and there is certainly a correlation between your consciousness and your physical brain. It would be absurd to deny the correlation between consciousness and your physical brain. One could easily prove it, because if a brick falls on my head now, I won't be conscious anymore. Now, does that prove that the consciousness is produced by my brain? Not necessarily. It could well be that my brain is a kind of transformer or transmitter of universal consciousness, in the same way that a radio or TV picks up signal, transmits it, and gives it a certain form. So when you destroy the television set or the radio, nothing significant is destroyed, because the radio was never the producer of that radio program. It was only created to bring those frequencies into this dimension and create a particular kind of world here that is created by consciousness, that is permeated by consciousness. So where science is going, whether they will eventually realize, I believe they will, that consciousness is not confined to the human brain. They will see that there is a consciousness in the flower. There's a consciousness even in so-called inanimate, a tiny, tiny glimmer of consciousness, even in a stone. So in other words, the material world, we could use the analogy and say the material world, the world of hard matter, is a bit like frozen consciousness. In the same way that water can exist in different states, you can have frozen water, you can have liquid water, you can have water as vapor in the air or mist. So you can, consciousness can manifest and does manifest as the physical universe. It can manifest as the human mind and thought, and it can manifest as presence. So you have the eyes, you have the liquid, and you have the immaterial vapor or mist. It's all water and it's all consciousness. That's so there is only consciousness. That's the one behind the many. Everything is consciousness. The essence of who you are is consciousness. And then the mind says, so what is consciousness? You can't say what it is because it's everything. So it's, if you said God, yes. And now, as a final insight, my mystical insight, this consciousness emanates from a source that does not exist in space or time. That is the what Buddha calls the unmanifested, the unborn, the uncreated. That is truly what, if God has any meaning, it is that. You cannot conceive of it, you cannot talk about it, you cannot name it. It's that which precedes the Big Bang. What was there before the Big Bang? Nothing. Okay, so the whole universe came out of nothing? Yeah. Okay, that's strange. That nothing, that nothing, is God. And then God appears as the world. And begins to dream the dream of the world. And after God has dreamt the dream of the world, the dream gets a bit difficult. And all the entities in the dream, the cells in the universal consciousness, believe themselves to be independent entities. And then the dream becomes a nightmare. And then God begins to wake up. That was the plan all along. And even as God begins to wake up, God continues to create, but at the same time realizes his, her own source. I'm trying to explain to you the entire universe, which is totally impossible, but it's a little hint. It's a bit like that. That's all one can say. It's a bit like that. But you contain the entire universe, and the secret of the entire universe is within you. You just have to look within. If you want to know about what about the universe, well, look within. You are a microcosm of the macrocosm, as the ancient dictum, as above, so below. God is in you as you. Consciousness is the light emanated by God. Now, in the same way that the sun emanates light, is light different from the sun, or is light part of the sun? It's always part of the sun. It's not disconnected from the sun. It still is the sun. So in that sense, each one of you, me, is a ray of that one consciousness, like a ray of sunlight. And then the ray goes out and creates a world and looks around. And then the ray doesn't realize it's part of the sun and thinks it's an independent entity that makes it really interesting, the dream. Otherwise, the dream wouldn't be that interesting. And then the universal dream starts. Wow. And then it gets difficult and dangerous. And then at some point, this ray of sunlight of consciousness begins to remember its origin, not only origin, but actually the source out of which it continuously emanates. Oh, it's not that bad after all. It's actually... And then it continues to exist in this world and create even in this world, but at the same time is conscious of the source. That means a totally different world is created, that's the new Earth on our planet, when humans are aware of their connectedness to the source. What they then do and their activities and what they produce as the world is very different from the world that is created by humans who are not aware of their source, in other words, egoic entities. And this is what's happening now. It's not that the dream of form is coming to an end, but there is a significant metamorphosis happening. The dream is turning into a very different dream, where humans, as humans become more aware of their connectedness to source, creation will become much easier. Time will come when humans can create by using thought only. Then you don't need factories anymore. You can create through thought. But that cannot happen until humans are connected, are aware of their source. Because if they had the power to create to some extent, this already happens, but if they had the true, full power to create through thought, they could create havoc. Imagine an ego being able to create whatever it wanted just by thinking about it. But thought is potentially the creative tool. It's already operating now, but it's used unconsciously and often creating not very pleasant experiences. So thought eventually can be used, but we don't need to go there. That happens by itself. For us, it is vital to live in connectedness with the source, and then that's called lucid, as I said the other day, lucid dreaming, lucid living. And so you become aware of the dreamlike nature of existence, and you actually enjoy that, and you create a more pleasant dream for yourself and for others. So that was the secret of the universe. I left it for the last session. So now you go off, little rays of consciousness reaching different parts of Australia and the rest of the world. Don't you forget to wrap up warm when if you live in the central or eastern parts of North America. It's very cold there at the moment. That's okay. Can enjoy that. So we've had a wonderful retreat. I'm grateful for being here with us in presence. You know what your mission is, but don't become missionaries. Don't try to convince anybody of anything. Just presence is enough. I'd like to thank our wonderful team for doing such great work, and the people also here at our resort have been very helpful, and I'd like to ask Kim also to come and join me here to say goodbye to you. Can you jump up? Yes. Okay. I'll be back.